Okay, we're beginning here, 16 lines down on the top of Pei Dalet Amud Aleph. Marba Ravashi Amar, Amar Kral, the Pasuk says, so Marba Ravashi is offering an alternative way that we know that birds of Kodoshim don't have a din of Kisui Adam. We had attempted yesterday to learn that through the impossibility of doing such a thing, and therefore there's no alternative, because you can't do it. If you can't do it, then obviously there must not be a din of Kisui Adam by Kodoshim. He tries to learn it from the Pasuk itself, which is that by Kisui Adam, we know that it only applies to a Chaya O'Of. And so when it says, Asher Yitzud Zayt Chaya O'Of, Asher Ye'achel B'Shafach Adamo B'Chisao B'Afar, so the comparison of Chaya and O'Of, Ma Chaya Eina Kodesh, Af O'Of Eino Kodesh. Just like Chaya doesn't have any manifestation in Hekdesh, the truth is that it does have manifestation in Berek Abayit, but the Kodshei Mizbeach, it's not relevant. There are no chayot that are put on the Mizbeach. The way that Tosafot kind of wants to say it is that there are no chayot that are brought in the Migdash. Af Of Eino Kodesh. So too, Of by Kodesh will not be relevant. So, Ima Chaya She'ein B'mino Kodesh. Wait a minute, Chaya has no manifestation in Kodesh whatsoever. Af Of She'ein B'mino Kodesh. So then you'll only apply this to birds that have no representation in Kodesh. Otzi Torin ubnei Yonah sheish b'minan Kodesh. So excluded from that would be maybe Torin ubnei Yonah. Gemara says lo kechaya. It has to be identical to chaya. Ma chaya lo chilakta ba. Just like by chayot, there's no differentiation. All chayot are precluded from the world of Kodesh. Afov lo tachlok bo. So too by birds, we're going to make no distinction, and every one of them will be precluded from the world of Hekdesh. And that's his source for the fact that there is no Kisui Adam by Hekdesh, by Kodoshim. Amale Yaakov Mina the Rava. So if Yaakov Mina asks Rava, Kaimalon, you've already established Chaya Bichlal Behema, the Simanim, that a Chaya is subsumed under the category of Behema for Simanim. We learned earlier in the Masechta that Behema is Bichlal Chaya, Chaya Bichlal Behema. The terms are used interchangeably in the Torah, and they could subsume within them both behemoth and chayot in either direction. So if you say that a chaya is bichlal behema, or really over here he's really looking for the fact that behema is bichlal chaya, the simanim, ema, nami, behema bichlal chaya, the kisui, let's say the same thing with regards to kisui adam. Just because it says chaya doesn't necessarily mean chaya exclusively, maybe it includes behema as well. Amalei, Alecha Markra, the Pasuk says about you, Ala Aretz Tishpachenu Kamayim, that you can spill their blood on the floor like water. Ma Mayim Lo Bai Kisui, just like water does not require Kisui Adam. Avhai Nami Lo Bai Kisui, so too, those don't require Kisui Adam. And over there, it's speaking about Behemot and Psulei Amuktashim, and it says over there, if they are Chulin, you can spill their blood on the ground, like Mayim, as opposed to those that are Hekdesh, that need to be put on the Mizbeach. So you see from that, that there's no requirement of Kisui. Otherwise, why would you call it water? You would say that it has to be taken care of like a Chaya. The fact that it tells you that their blood is treated like water means that it's precluded, or there's no necessity for Kisui Adam. Elamiato. If that's correct, yet Bilubo. Why can't you use blood as a mikveh? Amar Kara, so he says about that, Ach Mayan Ubor Mikveh Mayim Iye Tahor. There are exclusive types of bodies of water that allow you to be Tahor or can act as a Mikveh. Hane In Bidachrin Alo. Those items can provide Tahara as a Mikveh Mayan Bor Umikveh Mayim. Anything else is not included. And they only include things that are Mayim. So over here, even though Dam is classified like Mayim, it still doesn't qualify to be included in the possibility of being used as a mikvah. Maybe the fact that it says, maybe that's true only for water, and water-like substances, which is what the Torah calls water, will also be subsumed under here. What it's excluding when it says, are items that are not called water, things that are not defined as water. About dam, tikre mayim, maybe dam that's called mayim, hachanami, ain't hachanami that you could use it as a mikveh. Trei mi'utek divei. there are two mi'utim that are written, mayan, mayim, ubor mayim. Meaning that the word mayim over there is modifying mayan, bor, umigveh. All of those are modified by the mayim. So therefore you have a mute of mayan mayim and bor mayim. So therefore they preclude two different things. One of them is to preclude other mashkim, and one of them is to preclude dam, even though it's called mayim. Ema idvi idi the mute shar mashkim. Let us say that both of those are used to exclude other liquids. Chad mute zochalim, v'chad mute mikunasim. One is to exclude flowing water, and one is to exclude standing water. Now, the way Rashi explains it, which is somewhat difficult, is that zochalim refers to a way to be metaher mayim shuvim in a mikveh. We know that mayim shuvim are psulim for a mikveh. You can have drawn water be used for a mikveh. You need rainwater to be used for a mikveh that is mikunas. If water that's gathered together, it has to come from rainwater. You can't draw that water and bring it over there. But once you have a mikveh that is rove rainwater, then you can add on mayim shuvim in the following manner, which is called hamshacha. Is that if you pour the mayim shuvim away from the mikveh, and then you allow it through something that is part of the ground, attached to the ground, for the water to flow into the mikveh, that is quote-unquote mitaher, the mayim shuvim, from the problem of mayim shuvim. So if you have 21 sa'ah of rainwater in a mikveh, and now you want to get it up to the requisite 40 sa'ah, the remaining 19 sa'ah, you can draw water, pour it on the ground and let it flow into the mikveh, and that will get you up to 40 sa'ah. So what Rashi suggests over here is, one of the miyutim comes to tell you, hamshacha only works with mayim, with water, and no other mashkeh. Mikunasim is the actual mikveh, the first 21 sa'ah, also can only come from water and not from other liquids. If I do that, then I have no miyut left to exclude dam, which is called mayim. Where it says, Tlata miute tive. There are three miutim that are written, mayan mayim, bor mayim, and mikveh mayim. There are three different words that are used there, and each one of them is modified by mayim, and each one of them comes to exclude. One to exclude zochalim, one to exclude mikunasim, and one to exclude dam, even though it's called mayim. Now, Rashi's explanation is a complex way to explain this zochalim. The truth is that there is a separate issue with regards to zochalim, which is that a ma'yan, a spring water, can be mitaher even if it's flowing, even if it's zochalim. Rainwater can only be mitaher when it is standing water, when it's collected, when it's mikunasim. And so then, when the Gemara over here says, chad mute zochalim, chad mute mikunasim, it could be much more easily read as being an exclusion that relates to the different types of tahara that can be provided. Babayan, and then you would say mayan mayim means only flowing water from a mayan is allowed to be used. Flowing something else, some other liquid that's flowing from a mayan is not going to be good enough to be used for the mikveh. And then the same thing with the bor mayim or the mikveh mayim, which are standing water. That's mikunasim, rainwater that's mikunas. There also, it'll only be water that can be used, no other liquid. And then the third one, you use to exclude even items that are negdar kemayim, which are those things which are machshir, something that kabel tumah, yad shachat dam. The Gemara in other places tells us they have a din like mayim. So all of those liquids will be precluded because it says mayim and mayim only can work as the mikveh. So that would be the simpler way to explain the Gemara. Might be that Rashi didn't explain it that way because of the word zochalim, flowing, or mayan, by definition, is water. You don't have springs of other liquids, you only have springs of water. So then to say that water comes to exclude other mashkim, it's not really relevant. Unless you say that just other liquids flowing don't provide tahara, but that even water doesn't do unless it is from a mayan. So that might be what pushed Rashi in the other direction to explain it in a more complex manner. Tanrabanan, asher yatsud, it says in the pasuk, things that you hunt, ein li ela asher yatsud. That is only something that you hunt down, which was the havamina that the Baal Tosafot brought in the Mishnah, that maybe it would only apply to einu mizuman. Maybe things that are not domesticated or trapped already, those things require kisui adam. It would be possible, you could have thought, that einu mizuman that mizuman, something that was domesticated or in your possession already, you wouldn't have to do kisui adam. That the Mishnah dispels and says it applies both to mizuman and any mizuman. Here's the braita that tells us that, which is, you would have thought, yatsud means literally you got to go out and hunt it, you got to go and trap it. Nitzodim ve'omdim me'alehem. If they are already trapped, they are already in your possession, they're already domesticated, minayin, how do I know you dare? You're also chayav in kisui adam, to go. And the Gemara gives examples of those types of chayot and ofot, which are avazim v'tarnagolim, geese and chickens, which are brought up in your possession, brought up to, in a domesticated manner. They're already trapped. They're not going anywhere. They're not running around in the wild. You don't have to go hunting to bring them in. So how do I know that those also require kisui adam? So malomar tzeid mikol makom. The fact that the duplication of the word yatsud tzeid, which was unnecessary, it could just be a sheyatsud chayao. What is a sheyatsud tzeid? Tzeid mikol makom means any way that it comes, any way that it's quote unquote hunted by you, or any way that it's made ready for you, that requires kisui adam. Imkein matam lomer sheyatsud. Well, if that's the case, then why get involved in this verb at all? Why don't you just say, any chayan oaf that you eat requires kisui adam? Why do you have to mention yatsud at all? So, limda Torah derech eretz. The Torah is teaching you proper behavior, a way to conduct yourself. Shlo yochal adam basar ela bahazmanah zot. People should not eat meat without this preparation. And Rashi says it doesn't mean literally this preparation. It doesn't mean you have to go out and hunt your food every time you want to eat. That's not what the Torah is telling you. But Rashi says is that you should view it as if you have to go out and hunt every time you want to eat meat. So that should be a dissuasion from eating too much meat, because every time you want to eat meat, you have to go out and hunt. Well, that would be a big undertaking every time you wanted to eat meat. So then you would desist from doing that on a regular basis. Even though you have the ability to eat it because it's domesticated, you shouldn't take advantage of that, because the Torah is telling you, limit your meat consumption. And that probably is driven by what we're going to see in the upcoming Braita about the consumption of meat. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Gershom says that it means over here, shitrach kodem shiokal, that a person should do all the work and all the preparation before he eats. I don't know if that's just good advice in terms of you can sit down and eat. You don't have to jump up all the time during the middle of the meal. Or again, maybe it's along the lines of what Rashi is indicating over here, which is that you should make efforts before your meals so that you don't just sit there and always just eat, 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 but rather you're engaged in preparations. You're engaged in the understanding of what it means to undertake such a meal. So Tan Rabbanan, Pasuk says, Ki yarchiv Hashem elokecha et gevulcha, when Hashem expands your borders. And that is the pasuk that deals with basar tava, which is the ability to eat basar chulin. And over there it says, ki archiv Hashem et kulcha, when it expands your boundaries. Limda Torah derech eretz, shlo yochal adam basar elo leteavon. That a person should only eat basar. Now, the way that we would translate it today means leteavon, means if you are hungry for it. Or what we're saying here is a person only desires basar when they have teavon, when their desires are being triggered. Those desires are triggered by ki archiv Hashem et gvulcha. When you start to get wealthy and things go well for you, then you want more meat. And so it says that the desire for meat comes from a certain amount of affluence, a person's feeling a certain amount of quiescence in their life because of the successes that they have had and the wealth that they have accumulated. Yochal adikach adam min hashuk v'yochal. You would think that a person should go to the market and buy themselves meat. Tamalomar vizavachta mi bikarcho umitzoncha. That you should only eat meat from that which you own. Your tzon and your bakar is what you should eat meat from, not meat that is purchased. Yochol izbach kol bacharo biochal, kol tzono biochal. You would think that you should shecht all of your cattle and all of your sheep and then eat them. So malomar mi bikarcha, from amongst your cattle, below kol bikarcha, not all of your cattle, mitzoncha, from amongst your sheep, below kol tzoncha, and not all of your sheep. Mikan amar Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, that's what Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, based on everything that we have presented here, that mi sheyesh lo maneh, yikach, lifso, litra, yerek. Someone has 100 zuz, out of that money, he should buy for himself lifso. Rashi says it comes from the word ilfis, a pot's worth, of litra. Litra is a weight of yerek, of vegetables. Asara maneh, person has 10 maneh, which would be 1,000 zuz. Yikach libso, for his pot, he should buy litra dagim, a litra worth of fish. Chamishim maneh, he has 5,000 zuz. Yikach libso, litra basar. Then he should buy for his pot a litra worth of meat. Me'ah maneh, if he has 100 maneh, which is 100 times 100, or 10,000 zuz. Yishafto lok dera b'chol yom. They should put up a pot on the stove every day in terms of feeding him basar. He should be able to eat basar. So what Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is suggesting is that a person should only eat within his means. And so in each of these situations, depending on your accumulated wealth, then what you should be eating should be in relationship to what you have. So when you have a limited amount of resources, you should be buying vegetables to eat. You have more resources, you should buy fish. You have more resources, you should buy meat. And then if you have the unlimited, in a sense, resources, then you can have meat every day. The idea being that meat is not something that should be a regular part of the diet. It should only be something if you can afford it. And that's what was being taught by the Pasuk. The Pasuk says, Ki archiv Hashem el klechot gvukha. Kasher dibalach means that your desire comes from that accumulation of wealth. And even when you have that accumulation of wealth, doesn't mean you should be going out and buying stuff in the shuk and buying tons of basar. It means that if you have bakar and tzon, you can shech them to be used. That's the next pasuk. So you can eat it as you desire. When you desire it, you have to do shechita on your own animals. And then even if it's your own animals, it's mi bikarcha mitzoncha, from amongst your cattle, from amongst your sheep, meaning that you limit the amount that you eat. The Gemara sees, in general, the chasing after basar as being a certain amount of gluttonous behavior that is detrimental, not only health-wise, but detrimental because a person becomes accustomed to eating it, and therefore they're going to have to live a higher lifestyle that needs funding, and that funding is going to bankrupt you or make you poor. So you have to really be in concert with what your accumulated wealth is when you're eating basar or when you're eating certain things. It's interesting to note here, Rashi notes it as well as the Balei HaTosafot, that it seems pretty clear from here that fish was cheaper than meat in their locations. So that's what he's saying. The order here that's brought by Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is vegetables, fish, and then basar, which implies that fish is cheaper. They're obviously speaking, Rashi and the Balei HaTosafot, to the fact that by them it's just the opposite, that meat is actually cheaper than fish, which today is also somewhat true, that meat is many times cheaper than fish. And Tosafot just brings from another midrash that seems to indicate along the lines of what they're seeing, which is that when you have guests over, the first day you feed them avazim v'targolim, you give them geese and chicken. Yom bet, on the second day you give them fish. And on the third day, you give them basar. And then on the fourth day, you give them kidneyt. So you see there that the dagim there is more expensive than basar, because you're in a declining trend of what you give the guests. You give them the best stuff up front, and then you start to give them less and less. The longer they stay with you, more regular type of meals. So you're moving down the chain from the dagim down to basar, which means that the dagim are more expensive, or something more appealing than basar, as opposed to what's said here in the reverse, that the game come before basar in terms of affordability. Ve'inach. And the other ones, Eimatz, when should they do that? Me'erev Shabbat le'erev Shabbat. On a weekly basis, meaning basically for Shabbat. The way that Rashi reads it is, Inach, Elo Acherim. The other ones that you said, that they have litra dagim, litra basar, when should they eat it? So according to Rashi, it says once a week they should eat it. It's a little strange, because then what are they eating the rest of the time if they're only eating these items that they're purchasing once a week? Sounds like you'd be eating bread for the rest of the time. And these were specialty items that you added on. Only eat those once a week, according to Rashi. On the other hand, the simpler way to read it is, Eimat, those other individuals, when do they eat meat? And aside from the individuals eating meat every day, the other people are buying either a litra of basar, or a litra of yerek, or a litra of vegetables, when do they have basar? So the answer to that is once a week on Shabbat. Because Shabbat, as we know from the Gemara and Beitza, is not included in the parnosa that is afforded to the individual every year. It's outside of the budget that Hashem has granted you in terms of parnosa for the year. So your spending on Shabbat and Yom Tov is excluded, and therefore you can spend without consideration to your accumulated wealth, and that's what it means. May Erev Shabbat, Erev Shabbat. Every day, weekly, you can have your basar on Shabbat. Other than that, you have to expend in line with what your means are. Amar Rav, Tzrichim Anu Lachush L'Divrei Zakein. Rav says, we need to pay attention to what Rav Elazar ben Azariah said, meaning that we are governed by what he is saying, that we have to be careful how we spend, and we have to be careful in terms of living within our means. Amar Rav Yochanan, Abba Mimishpachat Briim Abba. Abba is a reference to Rav. We saw that earlier that Shmuel called Rav Abba. Rashi and Tosafot argued over there as to what that means, whether it means that Rav's real name was Abba, and everybody called him Rav as a title of respect, whereas Shmuel, who was more of a peer with Rav, called him Abba, and then that would be the same thing here with Rabbi Yochanan, that he's calling him Abba, or the other possibility was that his name was Rav, but Shmuel, out of his closeness with Rav, and his endearment with Rav, he used to call him Abba. He used to call him my dad, as if to tell him, like, you're the person I look up to, the person that I am close to. And it was actually a term of endearment and respect, but only used by Shmuel. And Rabbi Yochanan would be doing the same thing over here. So now, Rabbi Yochanan is saying, Rav, who comes from a family of healthy individuals, that's why he can live like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, which is live within your means and limit your consumption. Aval kagon anu, but like us, mishesh lo pruta betoch kiso. As soon as you have any money in your pocket, yiratzeno lechenvani, take it right to the store and buy food. So there's two aspects for this. It seems to be that Rabbi Yochanan is both speaking to a certain amount of poverty that exists, meaning that you can't just live within your means like they're suggesting. We don't really have the means, right, because we're living from hand to mouth. And the additional thing is that we shouldn't limit our consumption, because they were healthy. They could go with small amounts of consumption and stay healthy. We who are not as healthy, we need to just eat all the time in order to preserve our health. We can't be fasting or eating on small amounts and consider ourselves healthy. We need much more to maintain our health. What's very interesting over here is that Rabbi Yochanan in the Gemara is known as a Baal Basar. He's extremely heavy and he's a large man. It's interesting that Rabbi Yochanan was saying that we can't live that life of limited consumption when Rabbi Yochanan himself was a very large individual and he obviously had a large need for consumption. And so Rabbi Yochanan is pushing back against Rav's assumption here that we can live that life of mistapik b'muat. Rabbi Yochanan doesn't feel that he can do that. Amar Rav Nachman, k'non anu, like us, lovim v'ochlim. We even borrow money and eat. Rashi addresses it from the standpoint of the health. He says, Rav Nachman, who is a Talmid of Shmuel, means he's at least a generation, maybe a generation and a half after Rabbi Yochanan. Rashi says, "V'tamid olam haya." Here it says "mishtaneh." The Shidim Kubetz changes it "mit navna," which means to deteriorate. "V'holeich loya bari kotan shibimei Rabbi Yochanan." You read out that dorot in terms of health, and every subsequent generation is less healthy than the previous generation, and therefore Rav Nachman says, we can't even wait to earn the money to eat. We need to borrow to eat because you just need to eat in order to stay healthy. It also might speak to poverty again, although Rav Nachman was not necessarily in a position of poverty because he was married into the family of the Reish Galuta, and so therefore he was supplied or provided by the Reish Galuta as well. So it doesn't seem like he was poor. But what is interesting is you have Rav, who's in Bavel, making the first comment. You have Rabbi Yochanan and Eretz Yisrael making the second comment. Then you have Rav Nachman back in Bavel making the third comment, because you could have argued that Rav Yochanan was speaking about the difference between the wealth of Bavel and the poverty of Eretz Yisrael. But then you see Rav Nachman, who's in Bavel, making the same comment, which seems to indicate that it's health-related. And the fact is that this idea of mistabik memuat is true for individuals who are very healthy. And the less healthy you are, the less you're going to be able to live in this mistabik memuat, and that's going to put more financial strain on you. And Rabbi Yochanan says, to the point where you just spend whatever you make. And Rav Nachman says you even have to borrow in order to eat, in order to maintain your health. Otherwise, you're not going to be healthy enough to earn the money to replace or to pay back those loans. The Pasuk says in Mishlei, Kibasim lil vushecha, you should have sheep for your clothing, umichir sadeh atudim, and your flocks will provide you with the monetary means to buy fields. V'dei chalev izim lalachmecha, and the milk of your goats will be sufficient for your consumption, for your food needs. lelechem beitecha, and also for your family, v'chayim lenarotecha, and also provide life for those that are dependent on you, or those for the young ones. The Gemara darshins from that, it seems to be in light of what we were saying before, which is, kvasim levushecha, mideis kvasim yeh mevushuhecha. From the shearings of the sheep, you should make your clothing. Rashi says over here, this might be advice. Although, if you take it in the context of the Gemara, and again, we're going to see this in the upcoming Gemara as well, that you should be satisfied with using wool for your clothing. You should be wearing expensive items like silk and other things like that. You should suffice with the wool of your kvasim for your clothing. Umechir sadeh atudim. Gemara reads this as, lo'olam yimkor adam sadeh, v'ikach atudim. Better to sell your field and purchase atudim, flocks, v'al yimkor adam atudim, v'ikach sadeh. And a person should not sell his flocks to buy a field, even though that seems to be the pashtut pasuk, which is mechir sadeh atudim. The price of the field will come from your atudim. Gemara takes that actually in reverse and says, well, yeah, the price of the field will come from atudim, but then it's better to have atudim because that will provide you the price of a field, and better to have atudim because of the subsequent part of the pasuk, which is v'dei chalei vizim, dayola adam shiparnes mechalei vidim v'taleim shibitoch beito. A person should suffice from the milk of the goats and sheep that are in his possession. Lilach mecha, lelechem beitecha. That should suffice for your food needs and the food needs of your family. Lach mecha, kodem lelechem beitecha. Your food needs go before that of your family. We'll have to see what that means, because it seems a little strange that you would have to provide for yourself before you provide for others. Question is, what does that mean in the context of the upcoming Gemara? I'll come back and discuss that. V'chayim l'narotecha. Amar Marzutra, Breder of Nachman, tein chayim l'narotecha. You should give life to your young ones, meaning teach your children. Mikan limdat Torah derech eretz, shelo yilamed adam et beno basar v'yayim. Don't get your children used to eating meat and wine, because if they get an appetite for that, they're going to be big spenders, and they're not going to be able to keep up there or maintain that type of lifestyle. So teach them to be satisfied with that which they have and that which is sufficient. And that might be, again, thematically what the pasuk is saying all along, which is you can just keep your flocks and be satisfied with the milk that they produce and the shearings that they produce. Use that rather than the meat from these animals. Don't shep them for their meat, because if you keep them alive, they have a value in terms of their income that they generate. So better have income-producing items rather than to invest in eating basar, or in fields where you're going to have to work them in order to produce things from it. It's interesting because it goes against many other gemarot that view land as the ultimate store of value, and that you should sell everything in order to have land. Over here it seems to be working the other direction, but this theme over here seems to be mistapik memuat, which is be satisfied with what you have, and therefore if you have the flocks, they can provide you with your basic needs, including your clothing and your food, and you should be satisfied with that and don't go after basar. I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Someone who wants to become wealthy, yasok b'vei madaka. He should raise the thinner animals, which means flock animals, sheep and goats. So, Amarav Chista Maidichtiv, how do you know this? What's the post that teaches you that? It says, v'ashtarot tzonecha. It's being about your flocks. It calls them ashtarot. Shima ashrot et balehem. He makes the drasha on ashtarot. What does it mean, ashtarot? They're ashtarot tzonecha because those are the things that make you wealthy. Now, Tosafot brings a Gemara from Psachim that says people should not be involved in the bringing up of flocks of Behema Daka, because Eino Re'es Siman Bracha. You don't get any bracha from it. Now, the truth is that there was a Gzeira in Eretz Yisrael, or Takana in Eretz Yisrael, not to bring up Behema Daka, because, first of all, they steal, they eat other people's properties, as well as they destroy all the vegetation that's there. They actually make it almost impossible to live when you bring in these goats, especially, which eat everything, any green thing in their sight. They basically leave the place a desert or barren. So there is a restriction against bringing up Behema Daka in Eretz Yisrael. So you could have answered that that's the difference between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz. Although the Gemara in Psachim, according to many, has nothing to do with Eretz Yisrael versus Chutz La'aretz. Even in Chutz La'aretz, Eino Re'es Siman Bracha. So Rabbeinu Tam brings a distinction that Hotam B'Yishuv. That's when you bring them up inside of the civilized areas, meaning the inhabited areas. Here is where you bring them up outside of the inhabited areas. The way that I would have expressed that is means that if you bring them up in the inhabited areas, then you have a problem. They're going to steal and eat other people's possessions, number one. And number two is you're going to ruin all the vegetation that's in that area. But you do it out in the area where there's nobody, that's less of an issue. That could be one way. The Rabbeinu Tam says a very different reason, which is that when you do it inside of the inhabited areas, there's an ayin hara that's shalit. Because people see your flocks growing and see you becoming wealthier and wealthier. And there's an ayin hara. And you do it out in the fields where nobody is, there's no ayin hara because there's nobody around. So that's the distinction that they make. V'amar Rabbi Yochanan, kasa de charshin v'lo kasa de boshrim. You're better off drinking a cup full of water that was subjected to sorcery or witchcraft and not drink a cup of warm water. Very interesting, because it happens to be true that if you drink warm tap water, it's actually very dangerous. Because warm water allows for the flourishing of bacteria. So there are two ways to get rid of the bacteria. One is to boil the water, and then you get rid of the problematic bacteria. So then if you boil it and then let it cool down, it's fine. But if you have just warm water, it actually causes a growth of the bacteria inside. It's very dangerous. Also, if you keep it cold, the bacteria is unable to survive or reproduce inside of that cold area. So the warm water, it happens to be right, Rabbi Yochanan, that it is very dangerous for you. And so better to drink a cup of water that was subjected to witchcraft or sorcery than to drink warm water. I don't think it means it literally. I think it means it in a sense of scaling. Understand how bad a cup of warm water is by the fact that he's willing to drink something that was subjected to sorcery or witchcraft before he would drink a cup of warm water. It's just a scaling to tell you how bad this cup of warm water is. It's only true in metallic utensils. But inside of earthenware utensils, it's less problematic. The truth is that with warm water, it's not going to matter. It's going to be bad either way. It just happens to be that if you do it in metallic kelim, it actually causes the problem or exacerbates the problem, because metal also contributes to that growth of bacteria, because metal itself is not a necessarily stable material. It deteriorates over time. So it itself can contribute to the problem of the warm water that is inside of it. Below Amran, Elodoshadi Behu Tzivaya. So it's only true if you didn't throw into it. Now, the word tzivya or tzivi mean wood in other places. Rashi over here translates the tzivya as shorashei asavim v'tavlim. They're roots of vegetation and spices, meaning that if you put in spices, so if you don't put in spices, but if you put in the spices, then it's okay. Seems to be almost like the making of a tea of sorts, that when you put in the spices into the warm water and they soak in the warm water, it's okay. Seems to be that they believe that somehow killed off the problem or get rid of the bacteria. And the fact is, if you don't put in these spices or these roots into the water, which would have prevented the problem, that's only true if it wasn't boiled. But if you boiled it and now it's warm because it's cooling off from being boiled, then it's not a problem, which is also true. Again, if you boil off the water, you get rid of all the bacteria, and then when it cools off, then it's okay to drink the water. You don't have to drink the water while it's boiling hot. So it's only warm water that started out as warm water, not something that was boiled and now is warm water because it's cooling off. Person who has inherited wealth and wants to lose all that wealth, yobash klei bishtan, he should wear linen garments, bishtamesh b'klei zuchuchit, he should use glass utensils, and then hire workers and not supervise them. Now the Gemara goes through this. Yobosh klei bishtan, wearing linen clothing, bekitna romita, that is the Roman linen. I mean, it would seem to be some sort of rare type of linen or something that was more akin to silk, but very expensive clothing. So if you want to waste away your money, now Rabbi Yochanan's presenting it in a manner which is that you inherited the money, which is that you didn't earn the money. Since you didn't earn the money, you feel less attached to the money. So if you want to get rid of that money that you're not so attached to, this is the way to go about it. Might even be in a critical eye towards those that inherit wealth and live a life of luxuries and extravagance. Rabbi Yochanan saying they're going to just burn through the money and there's going to be nothing left afterwards because they're living this life of extravagance. And again, the same indication here is similar to what we were saying before. Rabbi Yochanan is saying don't do these things or don't engage in these activities because people get drawn after them, but then they waste away their wealth or their ability to afford such a lifestyle. Better not to be involved in these things and save your money and protect yourself in the future. And the Rabbeinu Gershom gives a slight nuance to this and says it doesn't mean literally that he wants to destroy the money or get rid of the money, but rather, if he wants la'abdam kelachar yad u'ma'at ma'at, if he wants to lose the money, not in a direct manner, but on a declining basis, then just use these items because they're going to wear down over time. They're very expensive. And in that way, you're going to waste away all the money over time. So that's the klei pishtan. Bishtamesh b'klei zuchuchit. We're speaking about glassware. Zukita chibarto. That's white glass. It's not clear here whether it literally means white glass, but it actually means clear glass, transparent glass, which is something that was very hard to come by and was much more brittle. And even though the Baal HaTosafot will point out that the Gemara tells us that mezman churban beit hamikdash batla zichuchit levana, that white glass disappeared after the churban. So Tosafot says over here, it doesn't mean it literally disappeared and it wasn't found anymore, it just became much rarer. When the opulence and the wealth and the bracha that was from the Beit HaMikdash existed, then it was much more available. After the Churban HaBayit, it becomes rarer to find. And that's what it means over here. It doesn't mean it disappeared completely. It just became so rare that it was expensive. So something that's brittle and expensive, they're going to break over time. All glassware breaks over time. And again, you're going to be wasting your money. And hire workers and do not supervise them. Speaking about oxen, the nefish psadayu, where there is a huge loss. The way Rashi describes it over here is that if you let them work with the oxen without supervising them, they're not going to care about the well-being of the oxen. So they'll take them through the forests, or they'll take them into the vineyards, and they'll let them scrape up against the branches and get cut up and get injured because they don't care. They just need to do the work. They don't care about the well-being of the shvarim. If you're there, then you're going to tell them, those are my shvarim, I want you to act properly with them. Their interest is doing the work that you hired them to do. They don't care about the animals. The animals aren't theirs for the long term. So they misuse the animals because they just want to get the work done to get paid for their work. If you're there to supervise them, you can prevent that. Tosafot brings a different gear for the Beinu Chananel, which is bitavare, perush bakarim. Those are cowboys. Sheinam amikim amachresha kira'oi. They don't allow the plow to go deep enough into the ground. You lose everything you planted. If you have workers who are driving the plow, meaning that they are cowboys because they have cows or oxen that are pulling the plow, and they're the ones driving it, those individuals, their vested interest is to plow with the least amount of resistance. So when they plow with the least amount of resistance, they're going to keep it as high on the surface as they possibly can, because then they did the work that you told them, but they have less work, literally physical work, because they don't have to have resistance. You want them to plow deeply to aerate the soil, to turn it over, to allow rain to get in there, all the things you need from the plowing. So you would need to supervise them in order to do that. Otherwise, they'll plow your field, you'll pay them, and they've done nothing to help you. You'll ruin the whole crop instead of being a deep plowing, which would have helped the crops out. That's the way that the Rabbeinu Chananel explains it. Again, continuing along these lines, Darash Rav Avira Zimnin Amar La Mishmei de Rabbi Ami. Sometimes you said it over in the name of Rabbi Ami. Zimne Marmalei Mishmei de Rabbi Yassi. And sometimes he said it over in the name of Rabbi Yassi. Mai dichtiv. What is meant by the pasuk in Tehillim? It says, Tov ish chunein umalveh. Good is the person who cares about others and lends to them. Yichalkel devarav b'mishpat. He should provide his words or provide himself b'mishpat in a measured manner. So now, it's not clear here when the Gemara darshens this, whether they see necessarily a connection between the first half of the pasuk and the second half of the pasuk. I think that you can connect between the two of them, but the way the Gemara darshens the pasuk is, Tov ish chunein umalveh yechalkel dvarav b'mishpat, do'olam, yuchal adam v'yishteh pachot b'ma sheyesh lo. A person should always eat and drink below their means. So that's what it means, yechalkel dvarav b'mishpat, that you will provide for yourself in a measured manner. You should eat and provide for yourself below your means. V'yobash v'it kaseh b'ma sheyesh lo. And you should dress yourself or have clothing that is equal to your means so that the person is not embarrassed and the person doesn't feel inferior in any way. V'yichabed ishto banav yoter m'ma sheyesh lo. and you should give honor or provide for your wife and children beyond your means, with more than what you have. Shein tluim bo, because they are dependent on him. Hu talui b'misha amar v'yaulam, and he is dependent on the one who created the world, meaning that you're dependent on Hashem, and they are dependent on you. All right, so let's take this piece by piece. First of all, what the Gemara is saying is that the word tov at the beginning of the pasuk is modifying both halves of the pasuk. Tov ish choneinu malveh, it's good to be a person who gives to others and provides to others, lends to those that are less fortunate. And also, tov yichakel devarav b'mishpat. It's also good to conduct oneself in a measured manner. Goes back to what we've been saying all along, that a person should be measured in how they eat and how they live. They should not be living a life of extravagance or opulence. They should be living within their means. And so that's the tov here as well. Whether there's a connection between the two, which is better to be measured in your manner, live below your means, in order that tov ish choneinu malveh, that you can provide for others and you can give to others. It's possible you can connect between the two. Or it might be that the two halves of the pasuk relate to that which is said in the memra, which is, with regards to yourself, tov that you yichalkel dvarav b'mishpat, live below your means. On the other hand, when you're dealing with others, like your wife and children who are dependent on you, then it's tov ish choneinu malveh. Then you should do more than your means to provide for them. That might be the contrast in the pasuk, and that might be why both halves of the pasuk are incorporated in the memra. The other thing to address is, didn't we say before that your lachmecha kodim lachmei beitecha? Your lechem comes before that lechem of your family. Over here it seems to be just the opposite, that they get more than you get. So there are different ways to explain it. One is to say that when it comes to basic provisions, when it comes to the basics, your food comes before your family. When it comes to the extras, then the family comes before you. So that might be one way to explain it. The other way to explain it might be an inyan of kavod, which is that with regards to precedence, the family takes precedence over you. I mean, they get their food first before you get it. In terms of serving and in terms of eating in the house, you'll get served first. Your food comes before the food of your family. The balabayit should be served first before the rest of the house. In terms of what you expend on them first before you expend on yourself. So those are two ways to reconcile that. Now the last statement of the memra, also it's not clear whether there's a connection between them, which is, it says that since your wife and children are dependent on you, you should be generous to them, and you are dependent on God. So whether that means that since they have no other means of parnasa, you should be generous to them, because you do have a means of parnasa, which is you could turn to God, and God provides you parnasa, which was true in their day. Women had no way to support themselves, and children clearly did not have a way to support themselves, and they were really dependent, literally, on their father, husband, for providing whatever they had. So in that case, since you're the provider for them, you should be generous to them. You, who are dependent on God, you have a means to go out and expand your wealth or to earn more, and therefore you could provide for yourself. That's one way to read it. I would have read that maybe even there's a closer relationship between them, which is, midasha adam modeid modedim lo. The way a person acts, that's the way they will be treated. So it says here, if you are generous with your wife and children, because they are dependent on you, then Hashem will be generous with you because you're dependent on Him. And that your behavior, the way that you treat your wife and children, Hashem will treat you in that same way. Be good to them, be generous to them, because Hashem will then also act in a similar fashion towards you and be generous towards you. So that's maybe a stronger correlation between the two items. And we know from the Gemara and Yevamot and other places that a person should be mechabed his wife more than himself. So he should treat his wife like himself and be mechabed his wife even more than himself. And that's being borne out over here, which is that the clothing that your wife wears can be even a little bit beyond your means, even though you should only wear clothing that matches your means. And again, all of this in the Gemara is very clear that people should not be accumulating debt or living beyond their means. You have to live within your means. And living within your means means partly that you live below your means in some areas. You have a little bit over your means in other areas, but it's got to come that you're living within your means in a totality. Now we're back to Kisoy Adam. Doresh Ravena, a pit called the Bay Resh Kaluta. He was Doresh by the front door of the house of the Resh Kaluta, the XL Ark, so it was a public forum. A Shochet the Cholet the Shabbat, someone who shechs an animal for Shabbat, Chayav the Chasot. You have to do Kisoy Adam. So the idea being, according to Rashi, since Shechita was nitan litchot because of the choleh, you're allowed to shech the animal on Shabbat because you have someone who's sick, who's in need of it. So pikuach nefesh is docheh the Shabbat. So since Shabbat can be nitchet because of the Shechita of the choleh, so too for kisui adam nitan haShabbat litchot. So too you can override Shabbat with regards to what you're doing. Now, it's very hard to understand Rashi's statement over here, because it doesn't seem to make sense, and it doesn't seem to me that the Gemara is suggesting over here that you can be mechalal Shabbat in order to do Kisui Adam. Rashi is seeing that Kisui Adam is part and parcel of the Shechita, and therefore what Ravina says, and we're not going to pass him like it, but Ravina is suggesting is that since you can shech, and permission to shech, you also have permission to do anything surrounding the Shechita, which includes the Kisui Adam. And according to Rashi, it makes it sound like you can even be Mechalo Shabbat in order to do the Kisui Hadam. And you can see that in Rashi. The Kevin Nitna Shabbat Nidachot Etzel Shechita Zo Nitchet Bechol Mitzvata Shel Shechita Zo. It's pushed away for anything to do with the Shechita, which is very difficult. Other Rishonim, including the Balei Tosafot, suggest that it just means that you can override Dinei Derabbanan. That we won't worry about issues like Muksa. We won't worry about issues that Midrabbanan would have prevented you from doing Kisui Hadam. We would waive them in this instance, since you have permission to shech, we would also waive the Dinei Derabbanan and allow you to do Kisui Adam. That's a more mainstream view in the Rishonim, the Tosafot, the Ramban, and others suggest that. We'll get back to what that means in this context. Amar lehu Rabbo, Ishtoma Kamar. So Rabba says about this statement of Ravena, Ishtoma, as Rashi says over here, Davar Teimahu. What he is saying is wild, crazy. It doesn't make any sense what he is saying. That's what Ishtoma means according to this version. There is another Girsa that Rashi brings, which actually the Girsa of the Rabbeinu Gershom, which is Idishma Kamar. Did he say it over in his own name? So that would be what Rabba is saying. Then he says, Lishtamua Lamore Mine. So in the first version, which says he's saying something that's ridiculous, something that is unacceptable, Lishtamutu Lamore Mine, cut his tongue out from him, meaning stop him from speaking. He can't go on giving piskei halacha like this. It's totally ludicrous. That would be the first way to read it. If the other way around is ishama kamar, if he's saying it over in his own name, lishtemua l'amore minei means pull the plug on his microphone. The amora was the person who said over the drasha of the chacham. He was the one with the megaphone. He's the one that gave it over in the language of the people. So he says basically pull the plug on him. Take away his amora, because he shouldn't be darshaning in public if this is what he's saying over in his own name. Titanio. So he brings a braita. The braita is somewhat difficult, cryptic, which will take us over to the Mishnah, which is Rabbi Yossi Omer. Koi ain't shochatim oto b'yom tov. You're not allowed to shech the koi on yom tov. That's our Mishnah. Mim shachato ain't mechasim et damo. And if you shecht it, you can't do kisui adam. Again, both of those halachot are found in our Mishnah. But he says, we know it, Mikal v'chomer. We can learn it out from Mikal v'chomer from Shabbat. Umam mila, shvada'ad, docha Shabbat. When you have a mila on Shabbat, you do the brit mila on Shabbat. Mila is docha Shabbat. That's from a series of kal v'chomers, whereby avoda is docha Shabbat, sarat is docha avoda, and mila is docha sarat. From that transitive property, we know that mila is also docha Shabbat, and you're allowed to do brit mila on Shabbat. So if you have a vadai mila to be done, you can be docha Shabbat. Ein sfeika docha yom tov. On the other hand, when you have a sfeik with regards to a mila, you're not allowed to be docha yom tov. That means if the child is born ben hashmashot, so you don't know if it's from the previous day or the next day, we won't let you do that brit on yom tov because it's a sfeik whether it's bizmano. And only a brit mila bizmana is docha Shabbat and yom tov. It's shalom bizmana, it's not. So when you have Benesh Mashot, you don't know if it's Bizmana there, you have to wait till after Yom Tov. So by something, a Mila, where if you know for sure you have to do a Mila, it's Doche Shabbat. But when you have a Sefik, you're not allowed to be Doche Yom Tov. Kisui, Shein Vado'o Doche Shabbat. Kisui Adam, which in a case of Vadai, is not allowed to be Doche Shabbat. We'll discuss what that case of Vadai is on Shabbat. Ein Din, Shein Sefiko Doche Yom Tov. And certainly it's Sefik. Should not push off Yom Tov, should not be able to override Yom Tov. So just to make it clear, the Kal V'chomer is the following. It is that on Shabbat, Mila is Doche Shabbat when you have Vadai Mila. When it comes to Kisui Adam, even if it's a Vadai Kisui Adam, it's not Doche Shabbat. So you see that Mila has more ability to override Shabbat than Kisui Adam. Because on Shabbat, Mila overrides when it's a Badai Mila, Zmana. Whereas for Kisui Adam, when you shech the Chaya or an oaf, on Shabbat, you can't do Kisui Adam. Then we move over to Yom Tov. Mila by Yom Tov, if you have a Safek, meaning we don't know if it's the Zmana Mila, we don't allow you to do it on Yom Tov, then by the case of Safek of Kisui Adam, like a koi, where we're uncertain as to whether it needs Kisui Adam, that certainly should not be allowed to have Kisui Adam be done on Yom Tov. So, Mila, which has more dispensation by Shabbat, and Kisui Adam, which doesn't have it, that Mila, that same Mila on Yom Tov, when it's a Safek, we don't allow you to do it. So then certainly the Safek with regards to Kisui Adam, we should not allow you to do it on Yom Tov. That's the Kal v'chomer of Rabbi Yossi. So the result is the Safek isn't Doche Yom Tov, which is what we said in the first halacha of the Braita, so that we said in our Mishnah, that Safek of Yom Tov, you're not allowed to do Kisui Adam. Amru lo, they responded to him, Tkiat Shofar b'gvulim tokhiyah. You can disprove that Kal v'chomer from blowing the shofar outside of the Mikdash. She'ein vada'a Doche Shabbat. You're not allowed to blow shofar when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbat. On the other hand, when it comes to a safek, you're allowed to override Yom Tov. You're allowed to blow the shofar on Yom Tov. Again, Gemara is going to go through each of these stages and try to understand what's being said. So Rabbi Lazar HaKapar, the great one, answered or responded to this. Tshuva, I have an answer. Malimila, shekein einu nuheged b'leila yomim tovim. L'mila only applies during the day, not at night. Kisui Adam has a different din, maybe, because it applies both in the day and the night. You're trying to learn from Mila to Kisui Adam, maybe the two are not comparable. Kisui Adam, which applies in the day and night, maybe it has a chumrah to it, which allows it then to be doche safeka yom tov. Amar Rabbi Abba, ze echad min advarim, shamar Rabbi Chia. This is amongst one of the items that Rabbi Chia said about it. Ainli alehem tshuva. I have no answer. Meaning that the Kal v'chomer that Rabbi Yossi said over here, he says we had no way to undermine that. Veishiv Rabbi Lazar HaKapar b'ribi tshuva. And in the end, Rabbi Lazar HaKapar came through and found a way to undermine the Kal v'chomer of Rabbi Yossi. Now the Gemara is going to backtrack and go through each of the situations. Tani mihat. You see from this braita, kisui she'ein vado'o doche Shabbat. The Kisui Adam, when it's Vadai, is not Doche Shabbat. Ma Vadai de Kisui de lo Doche Shabbat. When do you ever have an absolute necessity to do Kisui Adam on Shabbat? You're not allowed to shecht on Shabbat. So what is the scenario where you'll have Kisui Adam that is necessary and it won't be Doche Shabbat? Lava shochet b'chole b'shabbat. That instance must be a case where you're shechting for chole and Shabbat. That's when you have permission to shecht on Shabbat. Vadai you need Kisui Adam. This is a chaya now, or an oaf that you're shechting, and you need to do it, and yet it's not Doche Shabbat. And that obviously would undermine that position of Ravina. That's what Rav was saying. This braita makes it clear that Ravina's statement is completely incorrect. Mar says, wait, Dilmo de Ovar v'shochot. Who says that it was a case where he did it with permission? Maybe he shechted on Shabbat when he wasn't supposed to shecht on Shabbat. And now there's a din of Kisui Adam. Doesn't matter that he did the wrong thing, but now you have a necessity for Kisui Adam. Maybe that's the case. Mar says, Dunya Mimilo. Now Rabbi Yossi compares Shechita on Shabbat to Mila. Ma Mila Birshut. Just like Mila that's Docha Shabbat is when it's done with permission, meaning it's done because it's Mila Bizmano, Av Kisui Nami Birshut. So to the Kisui Adam is a result of something that was done in a permissible manner. That means it has to be done in a manner that would be mutar on Shabbat. The only way to do that is a shochet b'choleh b'shabbat. You see in the braita that Rabbi Yossi makes it clear that you don't do Kisui Adam on Shabbat, even when it's a vadai necessity for Kisui Adam, you don't do it on Shabbat. And the Kal v'chomer works this way. Milo, which vadai is doche Shabbat, Kisui Adam, vadai, is not doche Shabbat. Mila, where it's Doche Shabbat bin Vada'ot, where we say that Safek Yom Tov, we don't allow you to be Doche Yom Tov, then certainly by Kisui Adam, we won't allow you to do it this Safek on Yom Tov. Now, the whole Kal v'chomer is somewhat difficult to understand, and that is because we've been saying all along now, what's the problem with Kisui Adam on Yom Tov? And the same should be true by Kisui Adam on Shabbat. It's not that you are Mechalel Yom Tov in order to do Kisui Adam. Nobody thinks that that is the problem over here, and nobody thinks that's permissible. Shabbat and Yom Tov have an assay and a lotase, and the assay of Kisui Adam would not be Doche Shabbat, and would not be Doche Yom Tov. That certainly can't be what we're speaking about here. And therefore, the Gemara in Beitza says all the problems that we're dealing with are problems midirabanan. They are takanot or gzeirot dirabanan. And either the problem is muksa, that it's something that's not mukhan, or even if it is something that's mukhan, it was a gzeira, we don't want people to think that it's really a chayat, the koi. So those are all gzeirot dirabanan. It's very interesting. Rashi throughout the sugya keeps saying mechalin yom tov. We don't allow you to be mechalel yom tov. Mechalel sounds like it's a din d'oraita, not a din d'rabbanan. And again, it's strange because all the sugyot in Beitza say that the problem with kisui adam are problems of d'rabbanan level, not problems d'oraita. The only thing that you might be able to say is Rashi, the Gemara in Beitza, says about hachona d'rabba, which is d'oraita. Rashi says it's a din in muksa. And Rabba believes muksa is d'oraita. Many other Rishonim disagree and separate between Chachona and Muksa. But Rashi believes that Chachona, the Rabba, means that there are deot that Muksa is Doraita. If you do say that, then it's possible you could elevate it to a Doraita level, the problem of Muksa. That brings you back to the original problem, which is, why should you be able to be Doche? Something's Doraita for Kisui Adam. There's no reason. It's not an Aseh Doche Lotase. It's an Aseh versus an Aseh and a Lotase. And so it's very difficult. Elohim Cain, you say, like Rashi suggested over here, that shkita is more expansive than we thought. Shkita doesn't just include the actual shkita, it includes everything surrounding the shkita, and that is also the kisui adam. It's part and parcel of the shkita. If you have permission to do shkita on Yom Tov, which is doche Yom Tov, because it's doche nefesh, so to the kisui adam. That's an answer of Rashi. Tosafot says, Eif shala shev kal v'chomer zeh. Says, I have no idea how you can make this kal v'chomer work. That is because the reason that it's asur on Shabbat, as Tosfot assumes, has nothing to do with muksa, because he says even if you had the dirt all prepared for it, you still wouldn't be able to do it on Shabbat. And therefore, what does it have to do with the reason that we don't allow you to do kisui adam on Yom Tov misafek? The Gemara there gives a list of possibilities as to what the reason is. Either because it's muksa, and muksa we personally prepares for vadai, not for safek. Even if you say the person prepared it for a safek, nevertheless, we say that we don't want you to do that because it would indicate that a koi is really a chaya and you would eat its chaylev, which is not the case. Or the possibility that it's a melocha she'ain tzricha de gufa, that if you have a spade that is planted in the ground, we allow you to then continue to dig out the earth, even though that's an issur d'rabbanan, a melocha she'ain tzricha de gufa, because you're not trying to dig the hole, you need the dirt. It is a chofer v'tzarich la'afra. You're digging and you need the afar. That's a classic case of locha shein tzricha, the gufa, which only us serve the rabbanan. So the rabbanan in all those cases would waive that din the rabbanan when it is a vadai chaya on Yom Tov. They don't waive it when it is a safek on Yom Tov. What do any of those reasons have to do with the restriction on Shabbat? The reason you can't do it on Shabbat is either because it's a knas, because you shefted it on Shabbat, violated the Shabbat. We don't want you then to be able to do kisui adam if you did it illegally. And if you did it legally, the Baal Tosafot claim that even if you had stuff that wasn't muksa, the Chachamim didn't allow you to do the kisui adam on Shabbat. Now, if you believe that you can, if you had the afar mukhan and it wasn't muksa, that you would be permitted to do the kisui adam on Shabbat, then that would ease some of the problem over here, which is that if you would say that the reason that you can't do kisui adam on Shabbat is a problem of muksa, implications over that are that if you wasn't muksa and you had the earth prepared, you would be allowed to do the kisui adam on Shabbat. Tosafot does not agree with that point. But if you believe that, then you could compare the muksa of Shabbat to the problem of muksa on Yom Tov.
Or the problem of melacha shein tzricha de gufa by Shabbat to the problem of melacha shein tzricha de gufa by Yom Tov, which is the way that the Ramban, the Ritva, and many others explain the sugya here.
But for Tosafot, even if it wasn't muksa, you can't do the kisui adam on Shabbat. The problem he's having is, what is making it asur in Shabbat that is then comparable to the reason that it's asur in Yom Tov? The whole problem of Yom Tov is an isur d'rabbanan or an isur of muksa. Where do you see that being the problem on Shabbat? The problem on Shabbat is much more fundamental as to why you can't do it.
And because he believes that by Dekar Na'utz, the conclusion of the Gemara in Beitza is that it would even be mutar misafek. And so then it doesn't solve your problem over here.
Therefore, Tosafot comes up with a new problem with kisui adam on Shabbat, And through that, he comes up with the kavachomer. And that is, he says, Yesh lomar b'dochak kavachomer hochi. Out of no choice, I have to say, this is what the kavachomer is. Kisoy where, when it's a vaday chaya, it's not dochak Shabbat, even if you prepared it ahead of time, even though it's not muksa, and it's totally prepared ahead of time, we don't let you do it on Shabbat because it's a tircha. And tircha is not allowed on Shabbat. Even though Torah of Shabbat is asur, doesn't mean that Torah of Yom Tov will be asur. So then, certainly when you have a safek on Yom Tov, mishum iser guma derabanan. Either because of digging dirt, which the malach hashen tzricha the gufa on Yom Tov, or mishum muksa deim dato the safek. Or because you prepared something that was only for vadai, not for a safek. So that means that according to the Balei Tosafot, the Kal Vachomer here involves something that's not mentioned in the Gemara at all, which is called Torah. So the problem on Shabbat is a problem midrabanan. And so just like there's a problem midrabanan on Shabbat when it's vadai, certainly there should be a problem of a derabanan on Yom Tov with regards to a safek. But that's a new din that we don't have in Beit Zah. It's something that we never found before. And he says that, well, because of the Torah on Shabbat, that also now relates to the din derabanan that we have by Yom Tov. And that's how Tosfot gets out of the problem. Right now the Gemara continues and says, Amrulo, the Chachamim said back to Rabbi Yossi to undermine his Kavachomer, Tkiat Shofar Begulim Tochiach. Blowing the Shofar outside of the Mikdash will prove, She'en Vada Dochet Shabbat. When you know for sure it is Shabbat and Rosh Hashanah, we don't let you blow it. Usfeka Dochet Yom Tov. But if it's a Safek, it overrides Yom Tov. Mas Sfeka. What's the Safek by Yom Tov? Ilama is safek chol, safek yom tov, 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. One of them is chol, one of them is yom tov. Hashta vada yom tov dachya, safek yom tov, safek chol mi boi. When it's absolutely Rosh Hashanah, we allow you to blow the shofar. That's the mitzvah dayom. So now you have a question by safek yom tov, that you should be able to blow the shofar. That can't be the safek that we are speaking about. Ella, safek ish, safek isha. The safek here is whether it's a man or a woman. Meaning that an androgynous or a tumtum, where we have a safek about the gender of the individual, they are allowed to blow the shofar on Yom Tov despite that safek. This is premised on the shita of the Chachamim that a woman is not entitled to blow shofar on Yom Tov because she has no obligation to blow the shofar on Yom Tov. So if they were determined to be an isha, they would not be permitted to blow the shofar. If they're determined to be an ish, they would be permitted to blow the shofar. Here you have a safek, and we're allowing you to blow the shofar on Yom Tov. So despite the fact that on Shabbat, we don't allow you to blow shofar, even if it's a man, it's vadai your chayav in shofar. Nevertheless, we don't let you blow the shofar when it's Rosh Hashanah that falls out on Shabbat. But in an instance where on Yom Tov we have a safek, whether it's a man or a woman, we do let you blow the shofar. The Balei Tosafot are somewhat perplexed by this comparison, because the reason you're not allowed to blow shofar on Shabbat is because of the gzeira shema yavivenu dalet amot b'shut harabim. Maybe you're going to carry it for amot b'shut harabim, which is not applicable by Yom Tov, because Yom Tov you're allowed to carry. So how do you compare the vaday of Shabbat, where the isur is about shema yavivenu, to the safek of Yom Tov? The reason it's mutar in the safek in Yom Tov is because there's no problem of Shema Yavrivenu. The whole problem on Shabbat doesn't exist on Yom Tov. So Tosafot answers that in one of two ways. One answer is Tosafot Shitato in Beitza. Gemara in Beitza and Daf Yud Bet. Over there, Rashi and Tosafot argue about the din of Mitoch, which is that Mitoch Shehutra Letzorech. Since you're allowed to do Melocha on Yom Tov Letzorech, it's also Muta Le'enu Tzorech. Then you're allowed to use it, even if it's not Letzorech Ochel Nefesh. So that din, Rashi over there says, once you can already cook, once you can ever light a fire, once it's permitted in terms of what you do for Yom Tov, it also becomes permitted for other things that are not necessarily Ochel Nefesh. Tosfot over there says that that's not true. You still need some Tzorech, Yom Tov. It can't be Lo Letzorech Klal. That's how Tosfot deals with over here. But she says that if it's a woman that is blowing the shofar on Yom Tov, since she's not Chayevet in the mitzvah of shofar, you shouldn't be able to carry it B'shut HaRabim, for a woman who's not chayevet in the mitzvah of shofar. So that way you come up with the same scenario. Can't blow the shofar on Shabbat, Shema Yavirenu Dalet Amot B'shut HaRabim. On Safek Yom Tov, where it's again Safek Isha, who's not chayevet in shofar, so too over there, it's Lo Letzorech. If you carry it for her in B'shut HaRabim, that's a Lo Letzorech, according to Tosafot, because it's not necessary for her on Yom Tov, and that's not allowed. Rashi would say you can carry it anyway, because once it's mutar to carry anyway. So Tosva brings a second answer, which is that maybe there is a Isur de Rabbanan. Even though Tikiyat Shofar is a Chokhmah velo Milacha, it is a skill, not a Milacha on Yom Tov. Nevertheless, the Chachamim were Oser Klei Shir on Shabbat and Yom Tov. So the Gzera of Klei Shir would kick in. So just like by Shabbat, there's Gzera of Shema Yarvenu Dalamot B'Shabbat, the B'Shut Rabbim, so too by Yom Tov, you would have a problem of Shema Yitake and Klei Shir, and you shouldn't be able to blow the Shofar when you have a Safek Yom Tov. So Tosfot brings in Dinei Derabbanan that would match the Gzera Derabbanan on Shabbat to that which by Yom Tov would also be Gzerot that would be applicable, whether it's carrying B'Shut Rabbim, where it's Lo Letzorech, or it is blowing a Shofar, which would be Iser of Yitake and Klei Shir. There you see that even though on Shabbat we won't let you blow the Shofar when it's Vaday Rosh Hashanah, then in a case where it's Vaday Yom Tov, but it's a Safek where the person's Chayav or not, we still let you blow the Shofar on behalf of the woman. So you see that there's no correlation. Just because something is Vaday and Osir on Shabbat doesn't mean that in a case of Safek it's going to be Osir on Yom Tov. Because we have a paradigm whereby Shofar on Shabbat, where it's Vaday Shabbat, Vaday Rosh Hashanah, we don't let you blow the Shofar. Nevertheless, in a Safek case on Yom Tov, we do allow you to blow the Shofar. So maybe the same thing is true by Kisui Adam. Even though by Shabbat, it's Vaday not allowed, maybe on a Safek Yom Tov, or a Safek animal in that case, Safek Chaya, like a koi, we would let you do Kisui Adam on Yom Tov. Now Rabbi Yose the Tameh, why does Rabbi Yose not accept their response? Because Rabbi Yose is the Shitato, Damar Yishav Vadayit Namitaka, that a woman is allowed to blow Shofar on Yom Tov. This is the Shita that women who are Turot, from Mitzvah to say Shazman Grama, they can opt into the Mitzvah. And that's Rabbi Yossi's view. When the Torah gave a tour to a woman, it's not a tour saying not allowed, it's a tour saying not necessary. But if she chooses to opt into the Mitzvah, we would do it for her. And so Rabbi Yossi is in distinction with the Chachamim. The Chachamim believe that for a woman on Yom Tov, you shouldn't be able to blow the Shofar, because the problems that Tosfot brought up, shouldn't be able to carry it Rishut Rabim, Lelo Tzorech, you shouldn't be able to violate the din of Klei Shir for a woman. But when it's a Safek, like a Tum Tum, where we don't know if it's a woman or a man, we do let you blow it, because maybe the man side of this individual. But that all assumes that a woman's not allowed to blow on Yom Tov. The truth is, according to Rabbi Yossi, a woman is allowed to blow on Yom Tov, so then you don't have a problem at all. Both the man side and the woman side can blow on Yom Tov. There's no Safek anymore. There's no violation of Yom Tov. The Tanya, B'nai Yisrael Sumchim, V'lo B'not Yisrael. The Pasuk says, Samach and B'nai Yisrael teach you only men do smicha, women don't do smicha. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon Omrim, Nashim Sumchot Rishut. Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon believe that women can opt in and do smicha on a voluntary basis. You see, even when the Torah gives them a tour, they're able to opt in. Tosfot over here discusses what exactly they're doing over here because of the fact that you're not allowed to be mishtamish because of shim, and when you do smicha, you lean heavily on the animal. So he says maybe they're doing it in a lighter form of smicha, so that it's not real smicha, and that's how they get around the problem in mishtamish because of shim. And so therefore, we allow them to do this smicha when maybe there's a problem with the rabbanan. So to hear by Tkiyat Shofar, where there's a problem with the rabbanan, we let the women opt into it. It also happens to be that the Rabbeinu Tam in the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, with regards to this matter and in other places in Shas, brings his shita that not only can women opt into mitzvah d'aseh she'azman grama, they can also make a brocha on a mitzvah d'aseh she'azman grama, and that's the chiddush of the Rabbeinu Tam that is accepted l'alocha l'ashkenazim, but was not accepted by the Rambam and others, and therefore the Svaradim don't have their women make brochot on a mitzvah d'aseh she'azman grama. So now the Gemara says, Amar Avina, Ulamai Dekame Rabbonon Nami Itlei Pircha. And even according to the way the Rabbonon are presenting it, there is a problem. Ma'alat Tkiyat Shofar, Shukain Vada Doche Shabbat B'Migdash. They only spoke about Tkiyat Shofar in the Migdash, and they Gvulin. But Tkiyat Shofar in the Migdash, when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbat, they blew the Shofar in the Migdash. They blew the Shofar in the Beit Din. Tomar B'Kisoy Deleta Klau. There by Shabbat, Kisui Adam is never doche et Shabbat. So again, how can you compare Kisui Adam to Tkiyat Shofar? Tkiyat Shofar in the Gvulin might have certain leniencies because it overrides Shabbat in certain instances. Kisui Adam is never overriding Shabbat, so maybe then by a Safek, it will never override Yom Tov. So again, their way to undermine Rabbi Yossi and the Braita is also undermined, because not only because of Rabbi Yossi's Shita, but even the Shita Tam, that they believe that women are not Chayavot in Shofar, there's still an upending of their Kav Chomer because of Tzkiat Shofar in the Mikdash. So then the big answer comes, Heishi Rabbi Lazar Kabar Ribi. So Rabbi Lazar Kabar comes up with the final way to undermine that Kav Chomer Rabbi Yossi, Mala Mila Shekein Eina Noheged Belele Yomim Tovim, Mila, which is not Noheg on nights of Yom Tov, the Gemara says, Belele Yomim Tovim Hodolo Nahaga, Bishar Lele Nahaga, Mila is not only not allowed on the night of Yom Tov, any other night of the year you're allowed to do Mila, Ella, Mala Mila, this is the way it should be phrased, Shekein Eina Noheged Belele Tovim Yomim, Mila is never done at night, it's only done during the day. Tomar B'Kisoy Shenoheg Belele Tovim Yomim, then how can you compare the Kisui Adam to that, where Kisui Adam is applicable both during the day and at night? If you do Shechita at night in a permissible manner with lighting, then you're a Chayav in Kisui Adam at night. So maybe that's the reason that Kisui Adam would be different than Mila. So even though you have a Kav Chomer, maybe the Kav Chomer is undermined by the fact that Kisui has this Chumrah that can be done at night. And even though whether it's at night or day has nothing to do with the issues at hand that we're speaking about, the fact that it's Chayav at night doesn't really have anything to do with the issue of Kisui Adam or Mila or a distinction between them. Nevertheless, as Bali Tosafot will point out over here, when it comes to a logical argument, you need to undermine it with a logic that addresses the Kav HaChomer directly. But on the other hand, when you bring in a Kav HaChomer from the Psukim, anything that shows that there's a distinction between them, that is sufficient grounds to undermine a Kav HaChomer that is based on the Dinim from the Psukim, rather than something that's a svara, because there the issue is which is chamur and which is kal, based on the psukim. And if you have something that shows otherwise, even though it's not topically relevant to what we're discussing, it does demonstrate that there is a kula in this item. Am Rabbi Abba, ze achad min hadvarim shamai Rabbi Chiya. This is one of the things that Rabbi Chiya said, ein li aleihem tshuva. I have no answer to Rabbi Yossi's Kav HaChomer, v'shi Rabbi Elazar HaKapar b'ribi tshuva. And Rozar Kapar, the great one, came up with an answer that I didn't have to undermine that Kav HaChomer of Rabbi Yossi. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on Pehei Amud Aleph.